Books on Tape presents The People's Tycoon, Henry Ford and the American Century, by Stephen Watts. Read by John H. Mayer. Prologue: The Legend of Henry Ford. In the early summer of 1919, the familiar slender figure with the sun-browned face, sharp features, gray hair, and homespun manner took the witness stand at the courthouse in Mount Clemens, Michigan, a small town 20 miles northeast of Detroit. Henry Ford, industrialist and American legend, was pursuing his libel suit against the Chicago Tribune. A few years earlier, the newspaper had published an editorial describing him as an ignorant idealist and an anarchistic enemy of the nation, when he opposed President Wilson's use of the National Guard to patrol the border against raids from Pancho Villa's Mexican guerrillas. An outraged Ford had sued, and now the Tribune's lawyer, bent to the task of disproving libel by trying to demonstrate the truth of the famous car maker's ignorance. The task proved easier than anyone had ever imagined. For several days, under relentless questioning from the chief defense attorney, Ford disclosed an astonishing lack of knowledge. He asserted that the American Revolution had occurred in 1812. He defined chili con carne as a large mobile army. He described Benedict Arnold as a writer, I think. He could not identify the basic principles of American government. As listeners cringed, Ford, like a negligent schoolboy, fumbled question after question, finally responding to one, "I admit I am ignorant about most things." Even the defense attorney grew embarrassed and asked, mercifully, if Ford would consent to read aloud a brief book passage, or whether he wished to leave the impression that he, in fact, might be illiterate. "Yes, you can leave it that way," the witness replied calmly. "I am not a fast reader, and I have the hay fever and would make a botch of it." The jury, facing abundant evidence of ignorance, but none proving anarchism, found that Ford had been libeled, but it awarded him only 6 cents in damages. Newspapers and magazines around the nation, however, largely ignored the verdict and the legal issues, and had a heyday with his incredible testimony, chortling about the crudeness and shallowness of this American hero. Yet, as the episode played out, two unexpected things became apparent. First, Henry Ford seemed perfectly content to appear the provincial rube whose productive endeavors left little time for book learning. When pressed on his lack of knowledge about public affairs, he confessed that, regarding newspapers, "I rarely read anything else except the headlines." He was even more frank in a private interview with a reporter, commenting, "I don't like to read books. They muss up my mind." Second, common people, rather than being scandalized by Ford's predicament, seemed to appreciate it. They indulged his lack of learning and were amused by his response when he was asked what the United States had been originally. "Land, I guess." They applauded him for a refreshing lack of pretension and sympathized with his frank admission that he was too focused on work to get much formal education. Ministers around the country offered prayers for Henry Ford's deliverance from his snobby oppressors. Small-town newspapers urged busy farmers, laborers, and merchants to send sympathetic letters of support to the car maker, and tens of thousands did so. Thus, to the shock and consternation of highbrows everywhere, Ford emerged from a seemingly embarrassing debacle an even greater American folk hero than he had been before. This episode put on display one of the great stories and mysteries of modern American history. The trial revealed a love affair between a pioneering automaker from Detroit and common Americans that transcended all reason. The same Henry Ford who disgusted so many intellectuals, cosmopolitans, and opinion shapers enjoyed for some 4 decades a special bond of affection with workaday citizens who drove his automobiles and hung on his utterances. But what explained his enormous popularity, prestige, and influence? Obviously, it was not based on intellectual achievement, nor was it a product of mere wealth, since legions of rich industrialists in the United States failed to attain his public stature. In fact, many were denounced by the public as robber barons. Ford's exalted status did not result from technological achievement. Contemporaries realized that he did not invent the automobile, as many naive observers later assumed, and they certainly knew that his celebrated Model T was not the best car on the market. The mystery of the man and his influence only deepens when one searches more widely. Socialists such as Vladimir Lenin admired Ford as one of the major contributors to 20th century revolution, and it was not unusual to see portraits of Ford and Lenin hanging side by side in Soviet factories. Yet Adolf Hitler also revered Ford. He proclaimed, "I shall do my best to put his theories into practice in Germany," and modeled the Volkswagen, the people's car, on the Model T. In the United States, powerful capitalists such as John D. Rockefeller acclaimed Ford and described his production facilities as the industrial marvel of the age, while at the same time Woodrow Wilson convinced the automaker to run for the Senate in Michigan as a progressive Democrat. Many artists on the left denounced Ford's impact on modern society. Charlie Chaplin hilariously satirized his system of mechanized labor in the film Modern Times. Aldous Huxley, in Brave New World, sarcastically dated the beginning of modern degeneration from the year of our Ford. Yet a 1940 Roper survey of American workers found that they ranked Henry Ford above Franklin Roosevelt and Walter Reuther as the modern American leader who was most helpful to labor. Interpreters of Henry Ford's career, both during his lifetime and since, have done little to solve the enigma of his promiscuous appeal. For decades, journalists and historians have examined him in many guises. They have left a trail of contradictory assessments and unanswered questions in their wake. Was Ford an admirable titan who created an industrial empire, or a repressive tyrant who crushed everyone in his path? Was he a business innovator who pioneered path-breaking productive processes, or a greedy capitalist who degraded work for millions? Was he a social revolutionary, seeking to uplift American workers, or a cynical paternalist using subtle new methods of social control? Was he a public figure with the common touch, or an embodiment of the people's bad taste? Wildly divergent answers to these questions have never been reconciled, and Ford has been alternately denounced and deified since his emergence on the public stage in the early 20th century. The genuine man remains elusive. The secret of his appeal and his significance continues to be largely unexplained. This biography tries to capture Henry Ford in his complexity and uncover the sources of his public stature. It proceeds from the conviction that his unique relationship with America was shaped by the historical transformation of his age and a subsequent shift in cultural values. The period from 1890 to 1920, of course, framed the formation of the modern American order. These years witnessed the emergence of consumer capitalism, mass culture, bureaucracy, and the corporate state, all of which converged to create the century's most powerful nation. Ford, who leavened his enthusiasm for the future with a loyalty to the past, helped guide his fellow citizens through this wrenching period of historical change. The scope of Ford's life was itself astonishing. Born just after the Battle of Gettysburg, he lived to witness the dropping of atomic bombs at the end of World War II. But his significance went far beyond living through the vast changes separating the world of Abraham Lincoln from that of Harry Truman. Ford's life and career resonated.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?